in the limelight.
The military regime in what used to be Burma has carried out a genocide of Rohingya Muslims who are now determined to fight and defeat the aggressors of their homeland. Stay with us for a report from Yangon by Anthony Davis for Asia Times, titled Why Myanmar is Losing the Rakhine War. The Arakan Army's insurgency has escalated into an open-ended military quagmire of rising social, economic, and political costs. The escalating conflict in the western Rakhine state has been tightly quarantined from news coverage by the regime in Myanmar and remained well below the radar of the international community since insurgent violence erupted in the new year. But two recent events that broke through the media firewall, an unprecedented regime-imposed internet blackout and a rebel rocket attack on the outskirts of the state capital, Sitwe, have thrown the security crisis into stark relief while raising a wider question. Is Rakhine becoming Myanmar's Vietnam? On the face of it, comparisons between the conflict in Myanmar's western seaboard state and the war into which the United States forces floundered disastrously in the second half of the 1960s and early 1970s would seem improbable. No foreign forces are involved in Rakhine, one among several ethnically driven armed conflicts in Myanmar, and the scale of fighting is hardly on a par with the far larger and bloodier war in Vietnam. Nevertheless, the conflict between Myanmar's armed forces, or Tasmadaw, and the Rakhine Nationalist Arakan Army, AA, a well-trained and equipped guerrilla force which enjoys sweeping popular support and is already inflicting serious casualties, is looking increasingly less like the military's on-again, off-again campaigns against the other elder ethnic armed groups in remote border regions of the north and the east. Albeit in far smaller battle space, Myanmar's Rakhine War is emerging as an open-ended military quagmire with social, economic, and political repercussions from which the national mainstream will be lucky to remain insulated. Whether like America's war in Vietnam, it acts as a catalyst for wider social and political change remains to be seen. Served by the Ministry of Transport and Communications on all four of Myanmar's mobile service providers, the abrupt June 21st directive to shut down of all internet services in North Rakhine reflected growing government and military concern over the escalation of the conflict. Despite widespread pushback from human rights organizations, including United Nations Special Rapporteur on Human Rights in Myanmar, Yang Yili, government officials have justified the blackout as a move to curb virulent online hate speech that has purportedly further alienated the local Rakhine population from Myanmar's dominant ethnic Bamar community. It remains unclear how much of the ethno-racial incitement has been driven directly by the AA, a group with various front organizations renowned for slick propaganda and social media savvy, and how much has been spontaneously generated by stepped-up counter-insurgency operations and the excess which invariably accompany them. The reality is almost certainly a mix of the two. At the same time, however, there is little doubt that the internet shutdown was also likely driven by issues of military security, and the use of encrypted messaging applications as intelligence and operational tools for the rebel forces and their widespread local support base. Either way, the result is an information black hole beyond either mainstream or social media reporting, and in which the worst instincts of Tammada combat now enjoy free reign. The SITFI rocket attack unfolded in the early hours of June 22nd, involving AA fighters firing at least three Chinese-produced 107mm surface-to-surface rockets at a military jetty at the Caladon River, some 6 kilometers from the city center. One hit a Navy vessel, killing two personnel and wounding a third. SITFI was last targeted in a coordinated wave of three improvised explosive devices, IED blasts, in February last year. Left outside government offices and timed to explode around 4:30 a.m., the devices were clearly not intended to cause casualties. With heavy munitions hitting a military logistics facility, the latest attack was of a different order and demonstrated a new AA capability to operate freely near the edge of the state capital. It also established that the rebels have access to 107mm rockets, luckily purchased from the United Wa State Army, that is UWSA, in northeastern Myanmar, the country's best armed insurgent outfit. The missiles have also been used by the AA's ethnic Kachin, Kogang, and Tong allies, albeit far less effectively. Often inaccurate free-flight projectiles with a range of up to 8 kilometers, they are typically used for standoff attacks on area targets and fired, as at SITWI in Salvos. Photographs suggest the AA launched the rockets across the White River mouth from a distance of 2 or 3 kilometers. As the monsoon season approaches, the SITFI attack served to underscore the marked escalation of the conflict during the first half of the year. Since early January, when AA forces overran four police stations near Bangladesh border in Botidong and put the insurgency squarely on the national map, hostilities have unfolded in three broad phases. In January and February, the Tatmadaw, directed by de facto leader Aung San Suu Kyi, civilian government to crush the AA, scrambled to beef up forces already based in the state. An estimated 8,000 to 10,000 fresh troops were airlifted and trucked into Rakhine and adjoining areas of Chin State, most of them elements of various mobile, centrally commanded light infantry divisions. Even as new units arrived, the military launched a piecemeal counter-offensive centered at Butiong and Rotodong, where AA, estimated to fill the total of around 6,000 trained combatants, was clearly already well entrenched, spilling into neighboring Ponagyun and Kakutau townships. The drive was aimed at breaking up rebel concentrations, as well as rooting out AA camps, training facilities and arms caches in mountainous and jungle areas bordering on the more densely populated plains. At the same time, the army established new garrisons and artillery fire bases close to urban centers, tasked with dominating the surrounding countryside and supporting infantry operations. Tested in fighting in northeastern Kogang region in 2015, the anchoring of sweeps on fire bases is eerily reminiscent of American tactics in Vietnam. In Rakhine, as in Vietnam, Heavy artillery attacks have frequently taken the form of harassment and interdiction fire routine, largely random shelling intended to keep an unseen enemy off balance, but which often hits villages and civilians. A second phase of hostilities unfolded through March and April and saw the AA regain initiative, with some notably aggressive attacks across the flatlands of northern Rakhine. Suggesting that earlier Tatmadaw search and destroy sweeps had been unsuccessful, some of these operations involved major ambushes of convoys on the national highway between Yangon and Sitwe. Others saw hundreds of rebels launch frontal assaults on fixed positions. On March 9, an AA attack on a police base on the National Highway in Ponigion Township killed 9 officers. It came amid sustained clashes on the border separating Ponigion from Kakatao, during which AA envelopment of Tatmadaw reinforcements saw army commanders calling in close air support from new Russian Yak 130 ground attack jets. The same day as the police base attack, AA forces overran an army tactical operations headquarters in Butidong near the border with Bangladesh, reportedly wiping out most of the garrison. Among the hardest-hitting highway ambushes was an attack on March 18th on an army convoy near the Mahamuni Temple in Kakatao, an evidently close-quarter attack using small arms and rocket-propelled grenades, or RPGs, left around 20 soldiers dead, according to local villagers. The ambush also provoked a remarkable incident later the same evening when enraged army troops drove into ancient Rakhine capital of Maruk Yu, an important tourist center, and opened random fire on buildings and hospitals, wounding at least 6. The incident was publicized in courageous reporting by a journalist with Myanmar's The Irrawaddy news site present at the scene. The military later asserted that AA fighters had infiltrated the town, a claim denied by the AA. On April 9th, the rebels maintained the pressure with coordinated assaults on a police compound, which was being used as an army firebase in Maruk Yu and on other army base outside the town. Those attacks again left an estimated 20 government soldiers and police dead. Between mid-April and June, a third phase of hostilities saw fewer major AA operations as the military ratcheted up efforts to assert control over the plains and triggered multiple clashes. Tentatively started in February, this process has relied on stepped-up raids on villages accompanied by widespread detention of men and youth suspected of association with the AA. In Kakatao, arrests of village headmen appointed by the government's General Administration Department have reportedly triggered mass resignations from the post. Amid escalating clashes and reports of military abuses, the number of civilians, internally displaced persons or IDPs, has now reached around 40,000, with concentrations in Maruk Yu, Kakatao and Ponigon townships. Military casualties on both sides have risen steeply. The AA itself has claimed that between December 16, 2018 and June 8 this year, it has inflicted a slightly over 1,100 fatalities on the military in some 500 separate contacts, 237 of them protracted engagements lasting between half an hour and 3 days. Dismissed by Tatmadaw, which does not issue its own casualty statistics, the AA's figure of over 1,000 killed is almost certainly inflated for propaganda value. However, one foreign intelligence official monitoring the conflict, who spoke to Asia Times, estimated that between January and May, the The army had suffered at least 400 deaths, while AA losses had crossed the 100 mark. The body bag factor, the political impact of a rising toll of army dead on public opinion in heartland Myanmar, has yet to be felt at any significant level. No organized peace movement has emerged, and the absence of a military draft in Myanmar, coupled with tight surveillance of student and civil society organizations, makes such a development unlikely in the short term. Just 6 months into the insurgency, however, the growing number of young field-level officers falling to AA snipers is a hard reality which has gained some attention on social media. Beyond the rising level of hostilities and human suffering, the Rakhine War poses threats that are unlike those in other theaters of conflicts in Myanmar. At one level, there is a significant ethnic Rakhine component within the ranks of the Tatmadaw, which poses obvious security risks as ethnic polarization grows. Indeed, some analysts have noted the salience of out-of-area LID battalions deployed in operations since January, an apparent reflection of high-level concern over the reliability of local army units, which draw heavily on ethnic Rakhine recruits. Remarkably, the deployments into Rakhine theater since January have included 5 of the army's 10 LIDs and elements of another 3, an unprecedented and risky concentration of leading combat formations against a single insurgent enemy. As the fighting reason got underway in December, the Tatmadaw sought to balance the risk by declaring a month-long unilateral ceasefire covering 5 insurgency-prone military regions in the north and northeast of the country. At the same time, the AA's core area of operations is close to both the prospective China-Myanmar Economic Corridor and its terminus at Kakafia Deep Sea Port and to the cities of central Myanmar. Despite an IED incident in April involving a device left outside a government official's house that was safely disarmed, to date, there is no reason to suggest the AA has any interest in directly targeting CMEC-related installations. That said, the group is clearly shifting its organizational center of gravity and operational focus out from under the wing of its ally and one-time mentor, the Kachin Independence Army, and away from KIA headquarters at Liza on the Chinese border. Significantly, that shift distances the AA from Chinese influence and pressure, while its new proximity to the CMEC terminus gives it obvious leverage. So too does a sympathetic diaspora of ethnic Rakhine factory labor in cities in central Myanmar, most notably the old capital of Yangon. If the rebels were to use Trojan horse sympathizers to support IED attacks in urban centers in the country's heartland, a capacity it has undoubtedly already developed, the implications for foreign investment and the economy would be grave. Other decades of civil war, Myanmar's multiple insurgent groups have avoided carrying their campaigns to major cities. Whether the AA, a new and determined force on the national stage, will be willing to play by same unwritten rules is unclear. What is not in doubt, however, is that the potential impact of a protracted conflict on the stability of Myanmar as a whole is real. And that few, if any, Tatmadaw commanders will likely have reflected on the lessons of another Southeast Asian war, fought to disastrous effect some 50 years ago.